This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air, Linda Cohen along with you. Well, it's estimated that as many as 5.1 million Americans may have Alzheimer's disease, and the incidence of the disease is rising in line with the aging population, prompting the growing need for new and more effective ways to diagnose and treat Alzheimer's and other neural diseases. Well, here on with more on a new effort underway to do so is Dr. Sharon Brangman. She's Professor of Medicine, Division Chief of Geriatrics, and the Director of the Central New York Alzheimer's Disease Assistance Center at Upstate Medical University. Dr. Brangman is here with us in our studio, but joining us on the telephone as well from his office at Cornell University is her colleague on this project, Dr. Alexander Travis. He's Associate Professor of Reproductive Biology at the Baker Institute for Animal Health at Cornell University. Welcome, Dr. Brangman.
Hi, thank you.
And welcome, Dr. Travis.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Brangman, you've just been given this grant, along with Dr. Travis, to embark on a very exciting project. Can you give us an overview of what that is?
So, I got a call from Dr. Travis, who was assembling a team to look at biomarkers in various neural diseases. So, on our end at Upstate, we're going to help by bringing in patients with various dementias, including Alzheimer's disease. And then there's a campus in Buffalo that's going to evaluate patients with stroke. And then there's also a group in Albany where we're looking at head traumas such as concussions. And so the whole idea is to find out ways of early identification that might be even done on the field, on the soccer field, in the ambulance while somebody's being brought in with a stroke, to help doctors and healthcare providers make a diagnosis as early as possible.
So you're basically trying to get basically rapid and sensitive handheld, I think, biosensor platform to be able to determine whether people either diagnose and then later treat people with neuropathology. So you've mentioned stroke, in your case, Alzheimer's disease, and even traumatic brain injury.
Correct. So early information is very important, especially with strokes and brain injury like a concussion, so that people can be identified and interventions can be put in place right away, because that helps to save brain tissue.
How much money were you given to do this?
So the initial amount was $150,000 that went to Cornell. And then as a co-PI, we have pieces of that budget to help carry out the experiments and the projects here on this campus.
Now, you mentioned a couple of other collaborators. So you have Upstate Medical University, and you mentioned, obviously, Cornell. Who else is going to be helping you?
Buffalo, SUNY Buffalo, and SUNY Albany.
Very good. Well, Dr. Travis, I have to turn to you now because you really are the driving force here from the technical side and the biomedical side. And you're engaged, I guess, in the development of this biosensor. Can you tell us, first of all, what is a biomarker?
Okay. Biomarkers are substances that are found usually in the patient's bloodstream that correlate with the presence or onset of a certain disease. For example, Alzheimer's disease, as Dr. Brangman mentioned. And so these would be substances that you could detect, and their presence would then tell the doctor that, yes, this patient has, say, brain injury in some way.
And how would you detect it? Through the use of, I know you're going to be telling us, excuse me, more about how the actual technology works, but is it through a blood sample? Is that the idea?
Well, exactly. It's what we're, the grand vision for what we're trying to create is a little handheld device that you could put a few drops of blood in, and at the same time, it would be able to detect a number of different biomarkers. So you could think of a little card that would slide into a reader, which would be very similar to a digital camera. And then within a matter of minutes, this would tell you whether biomarker X, Y, or Z was present.
So help us understand, currently, I've heard a lot of research being done currently in different areas to look for biomarkers. And how are they doing it currently, and how is it different than what you're attempting to do?
Yeah, so many labs are looking for biomarkers of different disease. And what we're working on is actually on how do you detect them. Once you identify that biomarker, how can we detect that very quickly? Most of the current applications are using antibodies, and they will very specifically recognize and bind to a biomarker. But that takes a long time. Most of the kits that are designed to do this will take 2, 3, 4 hours even. And oftentimes that's too long for being convenient for use in a clinical exam in a doctor's office. or especially if you're in an ambulance after an injury or suspected stroke.
And so what are you proposing to use that's different?
Yeah, so our system is something we call TET, for tethered enzyme technology. And what we've done is figured out ways to use enzymes to detect different biomarkers. And we attach those enzymes or tether them to things like nanoparticles, very, very small particles that we can put in different parts of this sensor device so that we can have different channels or lanes that would detect different biomarkers. So it's a way of miniaturizing it and also making it much, much faster, because enzymes typically act hundreds to thousands of times faster than an antibody can recognize a biomarker.
So you're really making a point here that the speed of diagnosis, especially in some of these disease entities that we've talked about, like traumatic brain injury, concussion, and certainly stroke, is of crucial importance.
Absolutely.
So speed is really the driving force here.
That's very true. And so what we've done in our early studies in the lab is have samples that have different or known amounts of biomarker in them. And we'll use our tethered enzyme approach, and we'll compare it to the antibody approach. And we usually get very, very similar results, but ours we get in 5 to 10 minutes, whereas these antibody-based kits, again, 2 to 4 hours.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen, here with geriatrician Dr. Sharon Brangman and research scientist Dr. Alexander Travis. We're talking about the use of biomarkers to diagnose neural diseases like Alzheimer's or traumatic brain injury. And we're also talking about a new, very new concept in how to get these biomarkers and how to detect them. So obviously, the use of antibodies, instead of using antibodies, you're using enzymes. But there's got to be, well, first of all, can you describe exactly when you say this tethered enzyme technology? Help us understand a little bit better what you do. What is this TET?
So the first step is identifying which biomarker we want to go after or what we want to identify. And then we figure out, can we use enzymes? And it's usually not just one enzyme, but two or three, that together we can change detecting that into an emission of light. And so what our enzymes are actually doing is not only, say, interacting with the biomarker, but then changing that interaction and ultimately reducing light. And that usually takes a couple of steps. And by attaching our enzymes to nanoparticles, we can bring all those steps together in a very, very close, tight space so that with only a few drops of blood, very small volume, you can detect then that biomarker. And the reader that I mentioned before would basically be like a fancy digital camera that would be able to detect the light emitted from each of these lanes.
So the key way of being notified, or the key element here, is that they produce light, and light would be a positive response to the existence of a biomarker. Help us understand very briefly, when you say nanoparticles, it's so fascinating to most listeners not to really understand what that is. Tell us, what is a nanoparticle?
So a nanoparticle is something that is extremely, extremely small. And these could be, you could fit thousands of them in a period at the end of a sentence.
you mean in an actual physical period at the end of a sentence?
Yes.
Okay. And where do they exist? Where do we find these nanoparticles?
So nanoparticles are typically made. Most of the ones that we use now we can buy commercially. And you can get them in different sizes, and you can get them made of different substances. And so depending on the application, they can be made of silica, or they can be made of gold or metal like iron. So all different kinds for different applications.
So different elements, and then you basically use those to attach the enzymes, or you attach the enzymes to those particles, and then you can place them in various locations for use.
Exactly.
So tell us, it's very interesting, and I don't want to run out of time, but we have enough time, I think, for you to explain the background, because it's fascinating. How did you develop this concept of tethered enzyme technology? I understand it had something to do with how sperm get the energy to swim. Can you explain that?
Yes, actually. So my training in my laboratory is in reproduction, and we were studying how sperm get the energy to swim for their very, very long tails. And they have a really cool system where they attach a set of enzymes that can metabolize sugar and make it into energy. And they attach these enzymes to a solid structure that runs down the major length of the tail. So essentially, they've created a solid state system for energy production. And we just said, wow, that would be a really cool thing to copy, because you could make then basically an engine for very small medical devices that could be implanted in a patient's body, maybe even in their circulation, where they could use sugar in the bloodstream as a fuel and then make energy to carry out their function of delivering a drug or performing some other mechanical function.
So that had other applications other than this biosensor that you're talking about.
Exactly. So we were really trying to build an engine for a car of the future, a medical device that hasn't been really built yet. And so as we've been working on this and we've gotten a whole bunch of enzymes to work when attached to nanoparticles now, then what the idea was, well, now we've got these enzymes, what can we do with them now, today? And that's when we started to work on diagnostics of biomarkers.
It's fascinating. So currently, just remind our listeners and all of us how you envision this technology being translated into a real setting. You started describing the idea of perhaps in an ambulance or what have you. Run us through it one more time.
Right. And so this would be, there would be different cards that would be useful for detecting different sets of biomarkers. For example, one card could be for Alzheimer's, one could be for stroke or traumatic brain injury. And the doctor or, say, the paramedic would take a few drops of the patient's blood, put it into the device, and then the blood would be, the serum of the blood would be separated into different channels, each one that would be designed to detect a different biomarker. That card would just slide into a handheld reader device, and if the biomarkers are present, light will be emitted from each of those different lanes, and the amount of light will tell us how much of those different biomarkers are there.
That's incredible. That truly is. What do you think the timeline is from concept to actual prototype?
So we have right now the enzymes working on nanoparticles. And what we're doing with Dr. Brangman and SUNY Buffalo is now looking at patient samples. We've done this in the lab. We've gotten some preliminary data on some human patient blood, but we really now need to look at it with larger numbers of patients and say, you know, will this work now in people using human blood? And then at that point, we could have a first-generation device that maybe this would be done not in a card and with a handheld reader, but in plates that would be designed to go into existing readers that would be in a clinical laboratory.
Well, I'm going to have to stop you there because I have one last question for Dr. Brangman, which I think is of crucial importance. Dr. Brangman, how do you see this playing out in a clinical setting, briefly?
Well, in Alzheimer's disease, it's a little bit different than making an immediate diagnosis for someone having a stroke or a concussion, for example. But we do struggle with people who have symptoms that may not be typical for dementia or Alzheimer's disease. And we don't have a really good way of detecting early disease, which may occur many years before we see clinical symptoms. So I see this as being an important tool that might be used in that regard. There's a little bit of concern because we don't have any cure for Alzheimer's disease. So there's a lot of implications for identifying a very serious illness without a way of intervening. But this could also begin to help us identify ways of intervening or delaying the disease and maybe monitoring drug therapy. There's a whole lot of applications that could come out of this that I think are very important and exciting.
It sounds very exciting to me, and I want to thank you both very much for this information. My guests have been Dr. Sharon Brangman. She's Professor of Medicine, Division Chief of Geriatrics, and the Director of the Central New York Alzheimer's Disease Assistance Center at Upstate Medical University. And Dr. Alexander Travis, thank you so much. He's Associate Professor of Reproductive Biology at the Baker Institute for Animal Health at Cornell. Maybe you'll come back and tell us a follow-up as to what you actually do find and how this works. Once again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.